Southern Appalachian Coal versus Adkins and Mr. Yossi. I'd be happy to hear from you.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Dave Yossi. I represent Southern Appalachian Coal Company in this federal black lung appeal. This is a somewhat unusual case because ordinarily black lung cases involve miners with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and the question becomes whether coal dust exposure or cigarette smoking caused the COPD. Not here. Mr. Adkins has minimal obstruction at most and not enough to disable him. There is no evidence of restriction, which will become very important a little bit later on. He has decreased diffusion and low blood gases on exercise, and that's not a normal pattern for pneumoconiosis. That's why Drs. Hippensteel and Zaldivar identified other causes for his impairment. The ALJ failed to weigh those reports, and when he did weigh any of the physician's findings, he tended to get them wrong. Now, this court is to determine whether substantial evidence, more than a scintilla, supports the judge's factual findings. There are an unusually large number of factual errors in the ALJ's decision that aren't merely questionable interpretations. They're completely inaccurate conclusions regarding significant issues. They include the following. The ALJ believed that Dr. Rasmussen's opinion was supported by the Department of Labor's findings in its December 20th, 2000 rulemaking preamble that smoking and coal dust exposure contribute to obstruction, but Mr. Adkins' obstruction and bronchitis, to the extent they existed, were not the reason Dr. Rasmussen felt the claimant was disabled. The DOL preamble is not medical evidence, and in any event, the DOL preamble did not address the situation that Dr. Rasmussen was describing. The ALJ mischaracterized the record when he gave weight to Dr. Rasmussen's qualifications, especially when he referred to the extensive research, which were not of record, whereas Dr. Zaldivar and Hippensteel did refer to the research.
Let me make sure I understand where you're going. You started out, you said you only need substantial evidence, which is more than a scintilla of evidence here. And you have these two doctors, Dr. Rasmussen and you got Dr. Baker, who, if you just read this testimony, looks like to me is some evidence. But it appears to me is where you're going with this is that you are challenging the basis upon which they reached those conclusions, and that the ALJ should not have accepted their conclusions because the basis for it was not there. Is that where you're going with it?
That is correct, Your Honor. That is correct.
And are you challenging them as expert witnesses?
I'm not challenging their qualifications as physicians capable of giving an opinion on pneumoconiosis. I am questioning whether the conclusions they drew were supported by the evidence.
And that's where I'm having some difficulty understanding by the evidence of that diagnosis or by the fact that they, as medical doctors, examine him, and you, the court, is in a better position to say that their medical opinion is not supported by their diagnosis and their expertise?
Correct, Your Honor. The ALJ has a responsibility to look at the doctor's opinions, and while he's not stepping in as a doctor himself, he has the obligation to weigh the opinions that they're offering to determine whether they make sense. With Drs. Baker and Forehand, for example, they merely said, here are the findings, and yeah, coal dust exposure could cause some. The cigarette smoking could too, because there are two possible causes, and coal dust is one, we believe pneumoconiosis is involved.
I don't think I've ever seen it. I'm just trying to put it in perspective. I mean, this is sort of like workers' comp. I've done tons of those kind of cases, and in some of these cases, but it would seem to me, if you got a doctor, the ALJ kid, he could have easily accepted one set of doctors or the others, and he chose this one. And the fact that he does, it typically there's not much you can do about it. Even if he'd gone the other way, it wouldn't be much the defendant could do because there is evidence to support where he would go. But he chose to go this way, and there's evidence it's a workers' comp type claim, I'm saying. And typically, you're talking about a weighing of the evidence.
Except that the reasons he gave for accepting those doctors' opinions were not supported by the record. For example, when he says that I'll give greater weight to Dr. Rasmussen because he has greater reliance on the medical literature backing up his opinion, and Dr. Rasmussen didn't cite to any medical literature, that's
but
a clear error.
Did he have to give a reason? Could he have just said, I give it just because these two doctors said it? I mean, would that have been enough?
No, that would not have been sufficient.
He can't just say, I believe these doctors, and they said it, and that's the end of it.
He can do a credibility determination. I would agree with that, but it would not. He would have to have some basis for determining whether one set of physicians was correct and the other was not. For example, he found support for Dr. Rasmussen's reasoning in the opinions of Drs. Baker and Forehand, even though neither doctor had reviewed Dr. Rasmussen's data or endorsed his interpretation. Dr. Forehand's report was 4 months before Dr. Rasmussen's, and Dr. Baker never refers to Dr. Rasmussen. But more importantly, the ALJ showed he completely misunderstood all of the physicians' opinions when he based his decision on a significant restrictive pulmonary impairment, when there is no physician of record who said the claimant had a restrictive pulmonary impairment, significant or otherwise. The ALJ, by his reference to a restrictive impairment, completely failed to identify what every physician said was the claimant's disabling impairment, his gas exchange impairment. This confusion on the part of the ALJ goes to the heart of the conclusions he drew with regard to whether the claimant had legal pneumoconiosis and whether coal dust exposure had caused his disability.
You really, and maybe I'm just the only one, but you really got to help me a little bit on this. I've read Dr. Rasmussen's testimony and Dr. Baker's testimony. They look like to me they just say exactly what the ALJ found in terms of at least the ultimate conclusion of diagnosis of pneumoconiosis. I mean, they look like to me there's evidence right there that supports it. I mean, you may not agree with it, you may not like it, but it is evidence that supports his decision, and this is what was found on appeal.
Except that the judge completely mischaracterized Dr. Rasmussen's opinion when he was talked about a significant restrictive pulmonary impairment, or when he said that all the physicians agreed that cigarette smoking contributed to some degree, whereas Drs. Hippensteel and Zaldivar were trying to explain why it could be some cause other than coal dust exposure or cigarette smoking that causes fellow to have disabling pulmonary impairment on exercise. The ALJ relied on Drs. Forehand, Rasmussen, and Baker, as you said, and said that they discussed all the objective data and provide an articulate analysis of the causation issue, even though none of them addressed Dr. Hippensteel's data or addressed his conclusion that coronary artery disease might be responsible for the low blood gases, or Dr. Zaldivar's opinion regarding idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis. Drs. Forehand and Baker, in particular, just lay out some data and say this is caused by coal dust exposure. That's not sufficient to offer, those are not reasoned medical opinions at that point. They have to draw some conclusion as to why they believe coal dust exposure, as opposed to the heart disease or cigarette smoking, caused Mr. Adkins' impairment. In the same way, the ALJ summarily dismissed Dr. Hippensteel's and Zaldivar's opinions on the grounds that they are not adequately explained or consistent with the underlying medical data without giving any explanation as to why they were not explained or consistent. In fact, he dismisses Dr. Zaldivar's in a single sentence, in report in a single sentence.
Basically, Dr. Rasmussen and Dr. Baker were just incompetent. I mean, to get where you're going, you'd have to have testimony from the other doctors that says, well, these are two doctors that got to be able to make this conclusion that says the patient does have a chronic lung disease caused by his coal mine employment, and the presence of this pneumoconiosis is there. Both of them said it. So to get to where you're going, I think you have to show they're just incompetent. They got up and said this thing based on a medical opinion, but as a matter of law, we can determine there is no basis whatsoever for this. It would be almost equivalent to saying he didn't even work at a coal mine, so he couldn't have got this. Couldn't have happened, and that was on the basis, I guess, of what you're saying. The other two doctors here, is that what you got to prove? Is that it would have to be? I mean, because you couldn't accept what they said as doctors.
No, Your Honor, I don't believe I have to prove that. For example, Dr. Baker is incompetent, but I would point out that even he didn't find the fellow was totally disabled. He was working on hearsay that there were drops in blood gases on exercise. Nobody believed that the chronic obstruction, to the extent it existed, the bronchitis, was disabling in any way. So to the extent that they were saying the coal dust exposure causes pneumoconiosis, are they referring to the bronchitis? Because if so, that's not disabling. The blood gases are disabling, but there's no showing any connection between the bronchitis, if it existed, and the pulmonary impairment, which was the blood gases.
I just have a couple of small points, but You know, Dr. Rasmussen testifies in these cases quite a bit. So, you know, it'd be hard, I guess it would be, you'd be hard-pressed to prove he was incompetent, but he testifies a great, he testifies in these cases a great deal, and he generally testifies on behalf of a claimant, and then he's up against, I guess it's Dr. Zaldivar or whoever testifies generally on behalf of the employer. And Dr. Rasmussen is invariably attacked on appeal as possessing inferior qualifications or whatever, but no, he's been testifying in these cases for years, and many different ALJs have credited his testimony. So it'll be kind of late in the day for us to say he wasn't worthy of belief. And the other thing was, you seem to think there has to be, without quite saying so, you seem to think that there either has to be one cause or another, either the coal mine employment or the cigarette smoking, but the black lung scheme would still permit an award of benefits if the coal mine employment had been a substantial contributing cause, and probably the coal mines, I mean, just as a practical matter, the coal mine employment could make the effects of the cigarette smoking infinitely worse when you combine the two things.
If I may respond, although I'm out of time, Your Honor.
Can you maybe take it up in rebuttal or something? Was that?
I'll do that. Fine?
But just think about those two things. Mr. Gilligan?
May it please the court, my name is Ryan Gilligan, and I represent Mr. Alan Atkins in this federal black lung claim. This case presents issues of whether the judge's weighing of the medical opinion evidence regarding the issue of legal pneumoconiosis is supported by substantial evidence. We believe that the judge's findings are rational, supported by substantial evidence in accordance with the law. To first note, counsel for Southern Appalachian mentioned that in general, these cases involve issues of whether chronic obstructive pulmonary disease is due to cigarette smoking or coal mine dust, and that in this case we have exercise-induced hypoxemia, which is not a typical pattern found in coal miners. I would disagree with that statement and state that there is no true pattern of impairment found manifested by coal mine dust exposure, and that often in these cases there's a multitude of diseases and exposures which could account for radiographic changes or abnormalities on the blood gas testing and pulmonary function testing.
I just ask, there seems to be some dispute about whether there were 12 or 15 years spent in the coal mines. Why do you say 15?
Well, Your Honor, in this case, the administrative law judge found 15 years of coal mine dust exposure.
The employer contends 12.
I believe the employer, in its brief, mentions that it could be up to 14, but as we pointed out in our brief, we don't believe that they've sufficiently shown that the administrative law judge erred in his calculation.
So when he was spending these 15 years in the coal mine, was that time spent underground?
Yes, Your Honor.
What was he doing?
The record notes that he was operating a roof bolter. He was working as a cutting machine operator. A roof bolter drills the support for the mine, which cuts through rock and exposes the miner to a great deal of dust, which the miner touches.
So if you're drilling into rock, a lot of dust could fly out of there, couldn't it?
Yes, oftentimes. The jobs described by the miner in this case are what's called at the face of operation, which typically is associated with the highest dust levels. And I believe he testified that some of
these... What, was he using a high-speed drill to go into the...
Presumably, Your Honor.
Go into the rock, and that kicked up a lot of dust. They would have facial protective gear, among other things?
Your Honor, I don't know that the record supports that this miner used a dust mask, and even so, whether those dust masks work.
Well, they may not work, given the confined enclosure and everything, but it must be. I realize we have all these x-rays and blood gas studies and pulmonary function studies and everything, but I'm also just interested in the sort of practical nature of this person's, in this individual's job. And there must be some sort of protective equipment to prevent just the inhalation of this dust.
Well, Your Honor, given the degree of manual labor associated, especially with the roof bolting position, especially with these miners, oftentimes are not able to stand up. So these jobs require a heavy degree of manual labor, and respiratory apparatuses, it makes it very difficult to work in those conditions. And furthermore, although not contained in this record, a lot of those dust masks did not prevent miners
right.
from...
So what years was he working?
I believe he worked from 1972 to 1987.
Mm-hmm. What was the state of ventilation in the mines during that period of time?
I think, Your Honor, it's going to depend on, it's a mine-to-mine. It still remains a mine-to-mine specific whether they were operating within the code or not.
But the basic point you're making is that he was underground and he was doing a job that kicked up coal dust, and that some inhalation either through the mouth or the nose was almost inescapable. And that he did this on a daily basis over a large number of years, and that when you combine it with the expert witnesses, it's perfectly plausible to think that this was at least a contributing factor. What do you do with the history of cigarette smoking here, which seems to be...
Well, Your Honor, as Dr. Rasmussen explained, he didn't say that cigarette smoking is not a factor in this case. Instead, what he explained is that this miner has chronic bronchitis, evidence of emphysema, evidence of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and disabling values when he exercises. When this miner exerts himself and walks on a treadmill, he is not able to properly oxygenate his blood in order to perform the physical rigors of his last coal mine job. What Dr. Rasmussen explained is that coal mine dust and cigarette smoking both cause emphysema COPD through similar processes. He explained that coal mine dust causes an interstitial fibrosis which accompanies the emphysema, which is a common pattern, which the pattern of impairment that Mr. Adkins suffers from is common in coal miners.
So Dr. Rasmussen testifies, as I mentioned, to opposing counsel in these cases on a number of occasions. And on appeal, his credentials always seem to be under assault. And is that because he's a grade B reader, or what is it that always leads to the assault on Dr. Rasmussen's credentials?
I think Dr. Rasmussen has sort of pioneered exercise blood gas testing, and he's a renowned expert. Case law in the Sixth Circuit and this circuit recognizes that. He's testified before Congress on black lung. And he's a pivotal and very important physician that has incredible knowledge of the disease. He's under attack because if his findings are found credible, then a miner is likely to win. If Dr. Rasmussen found that the miner suffers from co-worker's pneumoconiosis and a disabling impairment caused in part or whole by that pneumoconiosis, so it's more red herring arguments at times. The judge has to consider qualifications.
But is he? Just in terms of X-rays, is he fully qualified to read X-rays? I mean, is he? What is this? Sometimes it comes up that he's a grade B reader or something, that he's not as it doesn't have the academic credentials that Dr. Zaldivar or some others have. What's that all about?
Okay. Yes, Your Honor. Just first talk about the X-rays. Dr. Rasmussen is a B reader, and there is case law that promotes that a B reader can be afforded full weight. However, there are other physicians who are radiologists, board certified in the field of radiology, and there is case law that promotes that an individual who's a B reader and a radiologist can.
What does being a B reader mean?
A B reader is a physician who is competent for detecting the presence or absence of occupational diseases such as pneumoconiosis. It's a test that's given regarding reading chest X-ray films. The films are graded under the International Labor Organization standard, which is a series of checkboxes. It was created in order for physicians to be able to communicate with each other as to the type, size, and shape of opacities and the distribution through the six lung zones that every individual has. By standardizing chest X-rays, physicians were able to communicate with each other and track the progression of co-workers' pneumoconiosis, which is recognized as a progressive and irreversible disease. But he is a very, very qualified B reader, and he certainly has offered an opinion in this case, which we believe is supported by a complete physical examination, a consideration of this minor's smoking history, his work history.
Did Dr. Rasmussen personally examine the claimant here?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your
Honor. This wasn't just a reading of the paper record, okay?
Correct, Your Honor.
All right.
And furthermore, doctors Forehan and Baker also.
I have a lot of desk doctors, but this is someone who actually conducted the examination himself.
Yes, yes. This Dr. Rasmussen, Drs. Forehan and Baker all examined Mr. Adkins, all conducted their own testing when formulating their opinions, and one could argue that they had they did perform complete pulmonary evaluations. That hasn't been challenged.
That's what the ALJ credited.
Yes, Your Honor. These opinions, the opinions of Drs. Forehan and Baker do support Dr. Rasmussen's findings, and that is the ultimate reason why Judge Solomon accepted the opinion of Dr. Rasmussen. Drs. Baker and Forehan also found that this minor suffered.
Well, it just comes down to the fact that you think it's not our job to reweigh the evidence.
Your Honor, in our brief, we believe that this court should not substitute its inferences for that of the administrative law judge, because in this case, the judge's findings are supported by substantial evidence. For example, Dr. Zaldivar testified that he didn't believe that coal mine dust was a cause in this case because he believed there was no dust deposition on the lungs. And he defined dust deposition on the lungs as a radiographic finding, as a chest X-ray finding, of positive findings of pneumoconiosis. And he stated that when the X-ray is negative, it means there's minimal dust deposition. And he felt, and that's a focus on clinical pneumoconiosis or medical pneumoconiosis, which is, it's the chest X-ray is what makes that diagnosis, but that ignores the regulatory term of legal pneumoconiosis, which includes, as I've stated before, chronic bronchitis, COPD, emphysema, or any respiratory impairment caused in part by coal mine dust exposure. The judge properly found, it's supported by Dr. Zaldivar's own testimony, and the Benefits Review Board agreed that it's primarily focused on the medical definition of pneumoconiosis. Dr. Hippensteel felt that this minor had chronic bronchitis, but it couldn't be due to coal mine dust exposure because he stopped working in 1987. Dr. Hippensteel's...
The ALJ explained not only why he did rely upon Dr. Rasmussen, but also why he did not rely on the other two.
We believe so. We believe so. He stated that Dr. Hippensteel failed to recognize that co-workers' pneumoconiosis is a progressive and latent disease. By saying that an individual who worked in 1987, who last had exposure to coal mine dust in 1987 and suffers from chronic bronchitis, that can't be due to pneumoconiosis, denies the fact that co-workers' pneumoconiosis is a permanent condition.
Okay, well, let me ask my co-panelists if they have any questions for you. We don't have any questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yossi, we're happy to hear from you in rebuttal.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. You asked about Dr. Rasmussen. Judge, Dr. Rasmussen is a respected physician, but he is not entitled to deference beyond the scope of the opinion he offers in any particular case. And I may have misled Judge Wynn. I apologize. This is more than just a question of whether there's substantial evidence to support the decision. The judge has a basic underlying responsibility to weigh the evidence. And he did not weigh the evidence. When he talks about the reasons he accepted Dr. Rasmussen's decision, his opinion, those are not factually correct. he completely misunderstood the nature of Mr. Adkins' impairment, which was a blood gas impairment. As for the coal dust exposure and cigarette smoking, Your Honor, in this case, the coal dust exposure had ended 20-some years before the first examination. Cigarette smoking, too. And this isn't the case where we're arguing over which one might have caused it, because Dr. Hippensteel said, look at the echocardiogram, the ECG. This fellow has a heart disease problem that's causing his blood gases to be depressed. Dr. Zaldivar said that the smoking had stopped a long time ago. It wasn't necessarily that, but people develop fibrosis independent of any kind of coal dust exposure or cigarette smoking.
With respect to coal dust exposure, don't we see a great many of these cases where they go through a long latent period before the pneumoconiosis manifests itself?
You may, Your Honor, and certainly pneumoconiosis is latent and progressive.
And it's the same thing with cigarette smoking. I mean, in some ways, they work in the same way, because you can stop for 20 years and help yourself considerably by doing so, but then there's a latent period, and 20 years later, you can suffer these sad consequences. And the same thing is true with pneumoconiosis. In this one respect, they work in the same way, don't they?
Your Honor, pneumoconiosis can be made up of a number of different conditions. As Dr. Hippensteel pointed out, chronic bronchitis is something that's generally associated with recent exposures to cigarette smoke or to dust, if it's going to be associated with them. You can have other chronic conditions that arise years later, but it's not going to be chronic bronchitis. That's more likely to be the claimant's ongoing problems with allergies, which Dr. Hippensteel found out about upon his examination. So the chronic bronchitis, the obstruction, the minimal obstruction, is not likely due to anything related to the smoking or the coal dust exposure. The point is that the judge, when he went through the record and tried to weigh the evidence, refused to weigh Dr. Zaldivar's and Dr. Hippensteel's opinions about the pulmonary fibrosis on the part of Dr. Zaldivar or the cardiac disease that Dr. Hippensteel found. And the employer is entitled to at least have that weighed and considered by the judge. The employer is at least entitled to have the judge correctly identify the cause of impairment if he's going to say that cause of impairment is legal pneumoconiosis and that's causing him to be totally disabled. And, Your Honor, if you do as I request and remand the case, the 15 years will become very important. I believe the claimant would have told you if he could have, where it says that he has 15 years of employment. I believe I demonstrated in my reply brief.
Dr. Zaldivar and Dr. Hippensteel, did they even agree among themselves?
Both identified causes of impairment. They were not the same causes.
But they were different. I mean, they didn't. The employer's witnesses did not present a unified picture, because one put an emphasis on pulmonary fibrosis, and the other put an emphasis on cardiac disease.
Either one could be correct, Your Honor, but the salient point was that neither of them believed it was due to coal dust exposure.
But why couldn't they? But they didn't have a coordinated position. They didn't get their act together in terms of, not that they should have. They should have testified as to what they thought. But it is a little odd, because neither one of them, I mean, they were not on the same page.
Well, I don't think it's odd, Your Honor. I mean, Mr. Adkins was asked to take a CT scan, as Dr. Zaldivar suggested, and Dr. Hippensteel believed would also be helpful to identify pulmonary fibrosis, if that, in fact, was a problem, and he refused to do so. He's right. But we tried to do some testing that would have shown or could have shown what the problem was, and the claimant refused. This case involves a need for – we need to have the ALJ weigh the evidence for the first time so that we can get a fair hearing and a fair comparison of Dr. Rasmussen's opinion, a respected doctor, and the respected opinions of Dr. Zaldivar and Hippensteel as well.
All right. We thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll come down and greet counsel. The court will take a brief recess. We'll just do conference now. Is that okay?
Well, counsel.
Would you prefer to do it later or is it now?
No, fine.
We'll go ahead and conference.